Last week, we heard from Bob about Moses meeting God in the burning bush. Can you remember what Moses was doing up the mountain? He was herding sheep. That's right. He was herding sheep up the mountain. Today, we read in Matthew's Gospel how a shepherd leaves 99 sheep to find the lost one. This is a very similar parable to the ones found in Luke. But it's quite different at the same time. You see, the parables in Luke are all about evangelism. About finding the lost. Whereas this one in Matthew is more about pastoral care. The shepherd has 100 sheep. But unlike farmers today, in ancient Eastern times, they knew they flocked. And they'd notice everything about them. So when one went missing, they would certainly know that it was gone. Now, some time ago, I used to work on a friend's sheep stud. And I can tell you, I did not care about those stupid sheep. Especially the ones with the funny horns that decided that the city boy was a good target. And for the rest of them, it used to chase me. For some reason, he must have gave me a motorbike that had a big chase this on it. Because they would just chase me everywhere. Or, during drenching, they would bite me or stand on my feet. I would not have made a good shepherd, and I would not have noticed a thing about them. So, I'm hoping you can see by this reading why it is more about pastoral care, why it is not about evangelism. The missing sheep is one of the existing flock. It goes missing, and the shepherd goes out of his way to find it. Why? Because it is a member of the flock. Every member of the flock is important. This is a great example for us to consider when we arrive at church each morning. Looking around, who is here? Who isn't? How long haven't they been here? Do I know they're okay? How many weeks do I wait before I ring them to find out if they're okay? The shepherd didn't wait. But that's great. And as we read, God doesn't want one of these little ones to be lost. So how do we look at the second half of the reading where we are called to rebuke and disown others? Well, there is a large pastoral care element to this as well. I wonder, and you don't have to show your hands because it would be too embarrassing. I wonder how many here this morning are fans of soap operas. How many watch Neighbours, Home and Away, Bold and the Beautiful, or my mother's favourite, EastEnders or Coronation Street? Alison's smiling away. Well, I don't want to offend anyone, but I'd rather stare at a blank TV than watch any of them. Yeah, I'm with John. But what I have noticed when I've been got no other choice but to sit there and watch Neighbours with She Who Must Be Obeyed, that they love a bit of conflict, don't they? They love it. They love to get into disputes and disagreements about just about everything. But they also seem to role model some clarity and honesty in conflicts, especially between parents and children, siblings and friends. Now, I do want to say up front that watching soap operas is not the textbook for solving life's problems, all right? I just want to make that clear. But I think it is time that in today's culture we really take an honest look at conflict and disagreement with a view of reconciliation. From my time in chaplaincy, I had far too much practice in dealing with conflict, on going through the reconciliation process. That being said, I think that this reading from Matthew has quite a bit to say about dealing with conflict from a pastoral care perspective. Firstly, go and see the person. Most of the issues I've dealt with were because the conflict was all about hearsay, all about what they heard from somebody else was said. But I'll be honest, this takes courage. But more importantly, prayer and humility. The other person may not respond positively, but at least you have spoken firsthand and not through others. If it works, that's great. You've regained a relationship. But if it doesn't work, and after a good deal of prayer and thought, if you are still of the opinion that there needs to be something settled, then take one or two others with you. Now, this is where it starts to get a bit difficult, because you shouldn't take people with you who you know will just back you up. People who won't tell you some home truths. People who won't tell you you're wrong. Remember, the point of the exercise is to achieve a resolution. It is not about proving you were right or justified. If you are going into these sorts of disagreements with an agenda of being proven right, you are going in the totally wrong reason. The purpose needs to be restoration. Also, by taking others with you, you have others who might be able to work with what is said to repair the conflict. One of the amazing things when I would get two students together was that neither party had considered the hurt of the other party was feeling. Most of the time, they only thought about their hurt and never considered the other party's hurt. Finally, if it doesn't work, in other words, if all else fails, you need to go to the elders of the church, lay your cards on the table, and sometimes, as hard as it sounds, sometimes we have to cut our ties with people. Reconciliation can only come after the problem has been faced. Now, I know that for many of us, this is going to sound harsh. And you know what? It is. But too often, Christians have been whitewashed issues. We don't face issues. We don't stand up. We refuse to deal with them, and inevitably, they reappear. And generally, worse than before. When they do reappear, one thing isn't for sure. Time does not heal. Time not dealing with issues only eats away at us. Now, none of this, as I've said, is easy. But remember that none of us are left alone in this. Our reading said at the end, when two or three of you are gathered in my name, what did it say? I am there among them. If we are to become the people of God that Jesus desires, then we can't be an insipid bunch of do-gooders that never face hard issues, because that's not what life is like, is it? Last week I read a quote while I was checking up on Trina and Doug on Facebook, posted by Nikki Gumbel. Churches are not museums that display perfect people. They are hospitals where the wounded, hurt, injured, and broken find healing. Churches are not museums that display perfect people. They are hospitals where the wounded, hurt, injured, and broken find healing. So if that's the case, it's because of our woundedness, our hurt, our injuries, and our brokenness, things are going to be messy. As we live together, as we live our lives together, we will naturally rub up and grate against each other. It's a natural part of being human, isn't it? We don't want to be part of the 99 that causes the one to wander off, for the shepherd to go look for and try to bring them back. We need to be a people reconciled to God, full of grace. We can try and reconcile ourselves to each other through that grace. Amen.